This is Mike Boileau of Lexicon Valley.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Are you one of those people who sometimes uses words?
Do you communicate or acquire information with, you know, language?
Hey, us too. So join us on Lexicon Valley to chew over the history, culture, and many mysteries of English, plus some wisecracks.
Find us on one of those apps where people listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter Matthew DeFranks in our nation's capital. Matthew, let's get started by talking about the capitals and the Great Eight. How is it possible that the Russian machine never breaks? How is it possible?
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable what he's doing this year, right? And even after, you know, the broken leg, what has he got? 30 goals and 42 games as a 39-year-old. Across the past week, I've been kind of just joking. You know, he's going to score 6 on Tuesday. He's going to score 7 against the Blues, and that's going to be the record, right? He only got 1 on Tuesday, so I don't expect him to put up 12 against the Blues tonight. I don't think that's in the cards. But I was thinking the other day, I was like, well, if he didn't break his leg, he didn't miss that time, how much closer is he right now to the record? And then the overarching theme of that is, what if he didn't have two lockouts, two COVID shortened seasons, like all those games that the league just missed while it was his career? Where would he be at right now, and where would he end up in the future? It's remarkable what he's been doing. And, you know, Jim Montgomery talked a little bit about it yesterday after Blues practice, that, you know, whenever they face the Capitals, the game plan is, okay, how do we stop Ovechkin? And it's been that way for 20 years now.
For me, the memorable Grade 8 versus the Blues flashbacks are poor Robert Bortuzzo. And on the penalty kill, valiantly trying to hurl his body and succeeding in hurling his body in front of those one-timers. And they are heavy, heavy one-timers. Certainly one of the great individual shots or skills in the history of the game.
Yeah, and I've talked to goalies before, because I've had this thought before where, you know, is it possible to make a puck move like you do, you know, a baseball? You know, I know there's no seams, it's a different shape, but it's like, well, do some guys' shots, do they curve, do they dip up and down, like do they kind of rise up? There's a lot of, you know, dents and divots in a puck at certain points, and does that change, you know, how a shot comes? And for the most part, every goalie is like, no, they're just straight. And then, you know, I think it was Ben Bishop in Dallas, he's like, well, they're all that way except for Ovechkin. His shot kind of has some movement to it, and he thought it was because it was the way that his stick is curved. I don't know the ins and outs of how his stick is curved, but I think the general consensus is, how does he use a backhand on that thing with how much it is that way? So yeah, just a shot that's pretty unique to relative to the rest of the league, and I guess relative to the rest of the league of all time.
And he's just such an interesting character, because he'll run you over. You know, he doesn't need that stinking backhand because he's got that shot. But he plows over people. He plays a physical game. And the thing about this year's team, Matthew, I think, you know, going into the year, there was probably some concern that the Capitals, with some rebuilding, could they contend for a playoff spot while trying to make sure the Great Eight gets his record? Can the two happen simultaneously? Can they contend, and can he get his record, given his age and all that it goes into trying to get there in the twilight? Well, they answer that question and then some. This team's played extremely well, and he is scoring goals, and they're winning. It's one of the better stories in the league.
Yeah, I think, like, that was kind of the thought. It's like, hey, like, we have this guy. We're going to want him to break the record in our uniform. But what does that mean for the rest of our team? And they've only just been the best team in the Eastern Conference, jostled back and forth with Winnipeg for best team in the league. And to be honest, I still don't know how it's happening. I look at the roster and I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess they have some guys overperforming, Alexi Protas, and you had Jacob Chychrun, Dylan Strome. Like, you have those guys maybe performing above expectations, but I don't think anyone saw them being like this sort of team. And when you have Ovechkin, and you mentioned the style he plays, I just looked it up, third all time in hits. And that's kind of a cluttered stat because they've only been tracking hits for about 20 years. So it doesn't include, the first 100 years of NHL hockey. But the fact that, he's at 3,700 hits, 3,714, that's a lot. That's a lot for a guy who's going to be the all-time goal leader, right? So it's a unique style he plays, unique shot he has, and in a way, unique longevity for what he does. He's up there in games played. I mean, I think he won't hit 1,500 this year. He's at 1,468, so still 32 games away from that, and there's less than that remaining this year. But if he's back next year, there's a possibility he rises up to maybe top 15 in games played of all time, of number one in goals all time. That's quite a career for a guy who I think a lot of people expected big things out of, obviously. But to break one of the perceived untouchable records, it's pretty remarkable, yeah.
And you think back, other highlights, winning a cup, celebrating the cup in proud Russian fashion, having a great time with it. Excellent commercial, the commercial he filmed with Nicholas Backstrom. So I, he's just, and he's a great personality, for the sport too, right? So it is, and the Blues, I'm sure they enjoy, all NHL players enjoy playing against greatness, and but man. And the exclusion from the Four Nations because of the situation with Russia. I hope that he's still going, and keeps going forward, and at some point all the countries will get to play against each other again. So that part kind of stinks for him. But man, it's got to be fun as an NHL player just to go out there. You're looking across the other way, and there's the Grade Eight. It's like, okay, it's on tonight. It's even guys who have played a lot of games in the league, like Braden Schenn's played all those games. You wrote about him, but he's still going up against a Grade Eight. How many times has he faced a Grade Eight? It's in over his career, he'll think back to that the rest of his life.
Yeah, and I think particularly about goaltenders in this situation, right? So when I think it was, I want to say it was when Ovechkin was approaching 800. It was either 700 or 800. Dallas was in town against the Capitals, and I think he had to score, maybe two goals against them to get there. And the fact that no goalie wants to be on the highlight reel forever. You show the 100, 200, 300, 400, whatever, all the hundreds, and then you show the record tying, record breaking goals. Like, no one wants to be on that clip. Like, just thinking about Connor Bedard's Michigan goal last year, and Jordan Binnington is going to be part of that highlight for the rest of time, I guess, throughout Bedard's career. Whenever they show his top goals, that Michigan goal is going to be on there, and Jordan Binnington is going to be on that highlight. And so, sure, a lot of goalies get up for facing Ovechkin, especially around milestone time. And it would have been interesting to see what kind of performance Binnington would have turned in had he been facing Ovechkin going towards a milestone, and how big of a milestone this one would be.
Well, if he gets up to 10 today, then I guess the clock will get started there. All right, let's talk about the Blues. Jim Montgomery has basically a mini camp coming out of the break for the guys who weren't in at the Four Nations, and the results have been pretty good. That doesn't really change the arc of the team this season much, but you're starting to see, and certainly the poor Kraken saw it when the Blues got loose against them. But on balance, mostly good period since the break, and some reason to believe for Jim Montgomery that he's seen some progress.
Yeah, it's been a good little stretch for the Blues, and even dating back to before the break, they're 11 seconds away from having a 7-game point streak right now. If they don't allow that last minute goal to the Panthers and lose in regulation, they pick up at least a point in that game, and they'd be rolling into to Washington on a 7-game point streak, and playing some pretty good teams. You know, across those 7 games, you look at it and you say, Utah, Chicago, Seattle, they're out of the picture here. But Edmonton and Florida, last year's 2 Cup finalists, Winnipeg, best team in the league this year. Colorado, they're not having as good of a year this year, but they still have those all world players. And then, if they get it done tonight in Washington, be the second best team in the league. So they've been playing some pretty good hockey against some pretty good competition, and there have been positive things to see from their overall game, right? So the last 4 games, they're 6 for 6 on the penalty kill. That's pretty good for a team that's, for that stretch was the worst penalty kill in Blues history. The last 4 games, they've been positive in expected goals at 5-on-5, that they're controlling play at evens more than their opponent, and they've been doing it at a pretty consistent clip. So there's good things to note about the way that they're playing beside the results. And even if you think about the Winnipeg game, they allow a 6-on-5 goal, and they lose in a shootout. And if they're able to hold on to that third period lead, and I realize this is another if for them, right? But that's a 4-game winning streak then. And you're coming in here and you have, a lot more confidence than I think they already have. And so they're playing good hockey. And, yes, it is encouraging. I think, we've kind of talked about the math a lot on the pod. And, the fact is that, Calgary is still on pace for 92 points. And that would mean the Blues have to go 16-7 on the rest of the way to get to 92 points. And historically, we've seen that number jump a little bit, 94, 95 points around the trade deadline once teams make their moves, and you have kind of a separation of teams going forward and teams selling. You kind of get higher point totals at the bottom of the conference, so or at the bottom of the playoff picture, I should say. And so if you want to say that the Blues need to get to 94 points, that's 17-6. If they need to get to 95 points, that's 17-5-1. Like it's still a big hill in front of them, even if you just look at the standings and say, oh, they're 4 points back. Well, they've also played 2 more games in Calgary right now.
When you look at the team, and Doug Armstrong's looked at the team, and he was quite disappointed by the way things went before the Four Nations break. Leading in terms of just getting results, there was some improvement in play, but they just couldn't get results at home, and ultimately lost a lot of ground. Looking at it like two things. One, there's contention, which is difficult for this team to establish for the rest of the way for all the reasons you just said. The other thing they can show is an improvement in culture, with a topic we've had quite a few discussions on here in the podcast. And I think you've got to be more concerned about seeing progress there than whether or not you stop this streak of not making the playoffs, because the most important thing is to establish a baseline and a culture of and a just a vibe about how you do things. And there's a chance to achieve that. But weighing against that is the trade deadline and some opportunity in the trade deadline, and a lot of Blues veterans finding their name in that speculation, just because Doug Armstrong admits he's open to listening to people. So kind of assess where you see that. Playoff contention is one thing. Trying to do enough to convince Armstrong to leave the bulk of his nucleus intact is another.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Stacy.
And we make Trashy Divorces, everybody's favorite good podcast about bad relationships.
Looking for something true crimey without the gore or the body count?
We've been churning out funny, feisty, feminist episodes since 2019. So if you're looking to put some scandalous stories told well into your ears this summer, check out Trashy Divorces wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trust us, we've covered someone you love.
Or someone you love to hate.
It's tax time, y'all. If you want to file free, this next one's for you.
Now taxes is so free. Tax-free edition, only roughly 37% of filers qualify.
love that jam. Up next, commercials.
Intuit TurboTax Free Edition. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, student loan interest, and Schedule 1A.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Stacy.
And we make Trashy Divorces, everybody's favorite good podcast about bad relationships.
Looking for something true crimey without the gore or the body count?
We've been churning out funny, feisty, feminist episodes since 2019. So if you're looking to put some scandalous stories told well into your ears this summer, check out Trashy Divorces, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trust us, we've covered someone you love.
Or someone you love to hate.
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act, because I can see, you know, last year they were kind of in it, right? They were in it until the last week or two of the season, in the playoff chase, and then they started playing the kids and moved on. And this year, yeah, they're trying to push their way back in, but I could see them also, you know, falling out earlier than that. And you know what this little run right now is reminding me of is 2 years ago when they go on a little hot streak before the trade deadline. You think they're pushing their way back into playoff position, and then Ryan O'Reilly gets traded. Nolichari's gone. You know, even before that, you know, at the All-Star break, that was when Tarasenko and Mikola got traded to New York. You know, you later have the Barbashev trade, and then downhill we go. So it's not, you know, the same situation, but this hot streak before the trade deadline seems to have, it's jogging my memory back to a couple of years ago and going through that as well. So, you know, I think this team is better than their results are, to be quite honest. Just overall, you can see where their 5-on-5 play has improved a lot under Jim Montgomery. And it's not like last year where the results were better than the team actually was. I think we're kind of the opposite right now. And yeah, the veterans that have found their names in rumors, I mean, obviously Braden Schenn is the biggest one that we've seen reported out there. And, you know, the Blues are pretty tight-lipped about what they're doing and who they have out there and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think my position still remains that there's such a value disparity in what the Blues think about Braden Schenn and what other teams should be thinking about a 33-year-old, you know, 45 to 50 point scorer with three more years left on his contract at $6.5 million. So, you know, the $6.5 million might not be an issue in the future when the cap rises, but it still will be an issue right now for teams trying to get him. And you know, the other thing is he has a no trade clause, and you know, he's talked about him multiple times, including just yesterday, that you know, he loves being in St. Louis. St. Louis has been the best thing for his career, and yes, that can change with, you know, an enticing position on a team somewhere else in contention. I understand feelings change, and you know, once you win a cup, you always want to win another one. But the fact is, he has control over what happens to him right now, and maybe that changes in the summer. You know, in the summer, his no trade protection drops to 15 teams, and obviously at that point the cap will have gone up for next year. His 6.5 won't be as much of an issue to add to a cap hit to a cap structure mid year. So, you know, it could make more sense as a summer deal, even if the Blues do want to do that, versus right now where you're looking at teams that, sure, some of them can use LTIR space, but there's still issues out there with contenders trying to find cap space.
All right, so my position on one, I love Schenn because I'm an old school guy, and I lived through the Chuck Norris division days, and for me, he's a solid connection to the team's heritage because of the way he plays. So, and I think under tough circumstances, he has really tried to be the right type of a leader. So, got a soft. I'm a grandfather now, twice over, so I'm soft that way. So he's on that. So I think there's so much value to him beyond statistics and what he's and where this organization's trying to get and what it's trying to instill or reinstill. I think that's a real critical part of it. Now, if Now, if there's a team that's trying to win a cup, comes in with a great offer, and he wants to go, out of courtesy to him, and if it's something he wanted to do, then yeah, after everything he's done here, for sure. It doesn't sound like that's likely. As far as the other guys that are listed, Nick Kyrgios had Jordan Cairo, who's always, a subject of some speculation for all the reasons that folks who visit the chat rooms can tell you. Pavel Buchnevich, who's trying to get his game back and hasn't really been back to where he was a couple of years ago, about to enter a long contract. Then you, for me, Parayko is a tough one. Colton Parayko gets a mention. That would be a guy that a lot of teams would want, and I think that contract with the cap going up and the way he played at Four Nations, I think he'd be an attractive guy they could get a lot for. But then where does that leave the team? And Jordan Binnington, I mean, again, he's coming off of Four Nations success. There are teams looking for goaltending. Edmonton, for instance, is needing a goaltender, I think, to, get that final step, because when Skinner has a bad game, it's a bad game, really bad game. So, but do you bet on Joel Holfer? If you trade Parayko, what happens to the rest of your decor? Because Fowler's playing really well and you like Broberg, but Parayko keeps the group together. So you can make a case against most of these guys that are getting listed, and they all have a lot of term left, which is a big difference than the last sell-off.
Yeah, I think that's a good point there about term, but I think the other point you made about, just guys being valuable to the Blues and where it puts them, that's probably the bigger point in my mind, right? When you look at Buchnevich, I mean, I'm not sure his value is going to be very high if given that extension that's already intact, for starting next year, and his no trade clause that was added to his current contract when he signed that extension. Like, he has full protection. The Jordan Kyrou, and even you want to throw in a Robert Thomas situation, that's a little bit different because they don't have trade protection right now, but they do get it in the summer. So if the Blues are at all entertaining this, which I don't know if they are or not, and I would, they've stated that this whole retool is built around them. So I don't know how you make that choice to do that, but if they are entertaining it, you'd have to do it in the next 4.5 months, basically 4 months, just to get that out before the trade protection comes in. And Robert Thomas has been on a real hot streak lately. I think you've seen the Robert Thomas that has been pretty consistently the Blues' best forward, best player for the last couple of years. And he's been driving play. His line with the Neighbors and Buchnevich has been really good. So, like, that's encouraging to see if you're, Blues management seeing one of your top players look like himself again. Kyrou, we've talked about him having a great all-around year this year. And Thomas and Kyrou, those contracts are going to age really well. I think right now you can look at what's happening in Vancouver and Elias Pettersson, and him and Robert Thomas are in the same draft class. They're the same age. They both signed big extensions. Obviously Thomas did it after his after a small bridge, and Pettersson's bridge was a little bit bigger. But now you look at the numbers, 11.6 for that guy, and 8.125 for Thomas. It's $3.5 million different, and that number is only going to shrink as a percentage of the cap moving forward. I guess for both of them, obviously, but it's going to be more pronounced for a guy like Thomas and Kyrou. And yeah, I think those contracts are going to be too good, to be quite honest, provide so much surplus value that it's going to be kind of a bad decision to walk away from those ones either way.
I love the phrase surplus value. That's a Scott Boras favorite. The agents love that phrase. And you're right. I mean, first of all, Thomas has got to be untouchable. And I think Kyprios said that he's the one untouchable. I would add, Broberg and Holloway and Neighbors to that, because they fit the age group. They are who they are.
And just
Two
what
of
you gave
those three
up
guys.
to, yeah, just what you gave up to get Broberg and Holloway too.
Yeah.
You have a lot invested in them.
And you're going to want to lock them in and make them part of your group for sure. You know, it's interesting. Like Cairo has come a great distance, right? And I think his name is just, people are used to seeing his name out there because of his, you know, skirmishes with coaches in the past. But, you know, the maturation has continued and they've asked him to drive a line, drive play on a line, separate from Thomas. And he has made some plays. And frankly, my argument always comes back to fans is, look, finding skill like that is hard. And some guys, there aren't many guys that have it. Yeah, he needed to get better as an all-around player, but that skill is hard to find. And it's not like this team has a lot of skill. So what do? If you trade him, then what? Because you don't really have scorers coming like him, a goal scorer who can break down people and you know, a volume shooter, a goal scorer, a guy that can who's dangerous all the time. He's got the puck on his stick. Those guys are hard to find.
Yeah, he creates his own offense, right? Like, you think about that goal the other night against Seattle in the first period. You know, it's just a simple, it's a one face off in the neutral zone. Blues kind of get some space across the blue line, but he makes it happen almost individually when makes that toe drag on a left Siak, pulls it inside, beats the goalie. Like, he can create his own offense, and that's a different skill than, you know, Thomas creating offense for others and Buchnevich creating offense for others. And you know, even a guy like Neighbors, we know where he scores goals from, and that's, you know, other people kind of getting the puck to those tough areas. So the fact that Kyrou can kind of create his own offense, particularly on the rush, is something the Blues don't have a lot of, as you said. And you know, overall, I think this season you've seen a lot more willingness to be involved in other parts of the game, whether it's tracking back in the neutral zone to pick up pucks that are dumped out. Like, he's done that a lot. You see how many pucks are chipped off the glass, flipped out of the zone, and Kyrou is one of the first guys in the neutral zone to retrieve it and re-enter. So he's getting back to pucks like that. He's playing, you know, he's never going to be a sulky guy on the boards, but you can see the desire is at least there to do that. And you're not thinking about what he's not doing. Right, you're not thinking about everything like that. And yeah, how far ago, how long ago do those turnovers late in games up in I guess it was Philadelphia, and then at home against Utah, he makes those two plays late in the third period, could have dumped it, instead it's a turnover, goes the other way, game winning goal scored against. Those games feel like so long ago right now for a guy like him who's having a pretty good year.
Yeah, it seems like Montgomery's hitting the right note with him. And, you know, he's Jim's a pretty relentless coach, but he's a communicator. At least for the record, he's pretty supportive of the group. So it's interesting to watch as Jordan matures how this coaching relationship goes. Last thing for Matthew DeFranks before he heads off to cover the skate today. The general trade market, three names that intrigue me the most, want to get your reaction. Mikko Rantanen, if he can't re-up in Carolina, and why would he re-up there, even with the extra year that's available, why would he sign there? Brad Marchand, if Boston calls off the jam because of the injuries that they have on the blue line, would be an interesting guy to send to another team. And then you mentioned him earlier, Elias Pettersson there. He is a zombie. They traded JT Miller to try to cheer him up. Nope, he's a dead man skating. And if you trade JT, could you really trade him? But again, with that giant contract, and you're baked your whole future on this guy, and he's a zombie. So your take on those three?
Yeah, you know, you think they can like undo the trade with the Rangers and instead just send Pettersson there or what? Yeah, I mean the Rantanen one, it's weird to me, right? Because you feel like the Hurricanes, yeah, they want to extend him, but they still did acquire him, like, knowing he was a UFA, like, and this is a team that hasn't had a star. Like, we talked about teams keeping their own players as, you know, their own rentals, so to speak, and like he already is a rental. Like, they haven't had a superstar. It hasn't really worked out so far, but that's a hard system to play. Like, Rod Brind'Amour runs when you're one of the best forechecking teams in the league, and Rantanen came from Colorado, who was like, especially that line that he had with, you know, Lekkonen, McKinnon, a lot of times McCarr and Taves are on the ice with him. Like, they played a rush game. Like they were quick up the ice to do things and quick up the ice to score goals. And that's just not the game that Carolina plays. So I wonder if there is some adjustment period to that. It's not like you get a guy who's been a 50 goal scorer and suddenly he just like doesn't work in your system. It might not be a perfect fit, but it's not like he just stops being one of the best players in the league. And Carolina, I've looked at and thought, in a way, they can be a similar mold for the Blues, just in that Sebastian Aho has been their number one center. He is a number one center in the league, and he's about as good as Robert Thomas is. He's never really, been that 100-point guy. He's been a point per game, 90-point guy, and that's kind of where Robert Thomas has settled. Last year, 86 points. This year, I think he's, a point or two above the number of games played because he did have that injury to his ankle. So, they have a number one center that hasn't been a superstar that does kind of produce similarly to Thomas. They have Svechnikov, who's the goal scoring winner, and you can look at Kyrou that way, and so you see some sort of similarities. Obviously, their depth, their style of play is different from the Blues, but they haven't ever had that superstar, and the Blues under Doug Armstrong really haven't done that either. And so the Hurricanes are trying something different. They're trying to get a superstar. They're trying to go for it. I think, I understand if you don't re-sign him in the summer and you don't win the cup, this trade looks horrible, especially when Natchez is doing what he's doing in Colorado. But the fact is that you're getting him to hopefully be that team in the end. And I don't know, I think he is their rental in my mind, but I understand the kind of the pressure point of wanting to have a contract done by next week in order to know where you're at and know if you can maybe swap him out and get a better fit in for your team. I don't know. It's something that I haven't really completely seen eye to eye with the whole situation, and so we'll see what happens with him. And then let's see, Pettersson. Yeah, it's been a tough go. I was watching his interview the other night, and he said, "Yeah, it's just more annoying dealing with the media." And it's like, well, maybe it wouldn't be as annoying if you played better hockey. Like, I don't know. I don't. He's still young. He still had some great seasons. You'd think that there would be a bounce back coming at some point, and there have been reports or rumors of an injury of him, for him. So you're thinking about maybe how much that has contributed. I don't know that for sure, but yeah, he's kind of a tougher one to look at because of his age and because of his contract and his past production that have all kind of pointed to in the right direction. So that one's tougher. I don't think you can be Vancouver and trade both Miller and Pettersson, right? Like the whole thing was you had to trade one so the other could stay. And if you end up trading both, then why'd you trade one of them at all?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then what do you have left? Finally, last thing, Brad Marchand. It'd be weird to see him wear another sweater.
Yeah, and he's talked about like how much he wants to stay in Boston. So I think a guy like that who's meant so much to the organization there, I don't know if you'd go against his wishes there. But he could help reset them a little bit, I guess, too.
Yeah, you could
But yeah,
always boomerang back like Keith Tkachuk did back in the days with the Blues. Trade him and bring him back, trade and bring him back. So it'll be interesting. All right, Matthew, let you get back to work. We appreciate it. This has been the NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon. That, of course, has been Matthew DeFranks. Reminder that you can get all of our content on our extra content on stltoday.com, the digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We appreciate your support, folks. Until next time, for Matthew, I'm Jeff. See ya.
Hi, this is Alex Kantrowitz. I'm the host of Big Technology Podcast, a longtime reporter and an on-air contributor to CNBC. And if you're like me, you're trying to figure out how artificial intelligence is changing the business world and our lives. So each week on Big Technology, I bring on key actors from companies building AI tech and outsiders trying to influence it. asking where this is all going. They come from places like NVIDIA, Microsoft, Amazon, and plenty more. So if you want to be smart with your wallet, your career choices, in meetings with your colleagues, and at dinner parties, listen to Big Technology Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.